You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Peter Cerace. Peter, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the gallery. There's a lot of questions I want to ask, but to begin with, can you tell us all about the show that's just closed or after now, and also your role there at the gallery?
Sure.
As founder.
Well, I'm the owner of Rare Gallery, and Rare Gallery is located in Chelsea on West 27th Street. And the show we just closed, because we're on summer break, was a solo show of Johnston Foster. And actually, Johnston has been with us longer than any other artist, over 12 years. The gallery's been open 17 years. And what's wonderful about Johnston's work, and I guess why he's so well highly regarded by museum curators, as well as collectors, as well as critics, is because there's a very playful quality to his work. He scavenges from dumpsters and alleys and traffic dividers, and he gets all this junk that people toss out willy-nilly without thinking of the environmental consequences, and he literally repurposes it and creates these fantastical creatures that are playful but also somewhat forbidding and foreboding, and comment on the nature of our society and how we treat our environment. He always said that he knew his work was successful if children loved it, and they do. They see the playful qualities, but there's also those qualities that hopefully older people or more mature people see, which is that if you don't respect where you live and the people around you, it comes back to bite you. So
that's very interesting. That's maybe a good way to also talk about your, as founder and developing what your mission is there. The work just sounds like it fits into the criteria. When you talk about the kind of artists that you seek out, your website is very informative in saying the kind of work that you might be looking for. And it talks about work being directly connected with life experiences, about sincerity, about it not being slick, and even about the artist's hand in it. And it sounds like what the work you're describing is typifies that kind of, there's a craft to what he's doing, there's a vision to what he's doing, there's even a kind of activist element to what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did your homework. I wrote the statement on the website and many years ago, and it's a lot of care was put in it to begin with, and the mission of the gallery has always been that exactly, to find work that really has meaning to the artist, and for me, very personally, that is work that reflects how they grew up, how they were raised, what their true interests are. I've never been particularly interested in very political work, because that often makes a statement that isn't experiential in that the artist may not necessarily have experienced throughout his life the issues that are raised by the work. Now, that doesn't invalidate the work in any way. It's a statement work. It could be very immediate and not necessarily related to how the artist spent the last 20 years of his or her life. So while there's definitely a spot for political work in the world, most definitely, because it serves an important purpose, it's not really the work that interests me. I'm not interested in work about a particular war in a particular country unless the artist served in the military, for example, and therefore it would have been more than just a political statement. It would have been a life experience statement. And Johnston typifies the type of artist that we show. And in fact, he, when we came across his work more than 12 years ago, a light went off in my head that said, this is the direction I want to take the gallery. So every artist since Johnston has been an artist that reflects the values on our website, which is work that is based on life experiences of the artist, which shows the hand of the artist which is work that has unusual processes, uses unusual materials, or uses even common materials in unusual, unexpected ways. And that's really what the gallery is all about.
Peter, let me ask you about the beginning of the gallery. How was it founded, and what was some of your thinking in starting a gallery?
Well, to be quite frank, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I know why I wanted to open a gallery. I grew up in a fairly large family, and my parents, especially my mom, took us to museums, enrolled me in programs, bought me art books. My dad actually bought the art books, but both parents were very encouraging, and it really stuck with me. So I was exposed to art at an early age. I read about art and started actually, I guess, assembling a library without realizing I was doing so at a very young age. And I had a number of careers before opening the gallery. I was an attorney. I still am, but I don't really practice per se. I was in sports and event marketing for about a dozen years, and then I opened the gallery. So it's really, but I didn't know what I was really getting into. I had a PR and a law background and an event background. But until you actually, and a knowledge, because I started also collecting art in my 20s, and I had read about a lot of it, but I didn't really have that strong a background in contemporary art. But at some point in my career, I wanted to own my own business, and I thought, well, this is exciting. This is what I love. This is my passion. So I did open a gallery with a business partner who had some experience in the gallery world. And when we opened, we knew what we liked, but I didn't have a particular vision the first several years until I met Johnston, and his work sort of guided where the gallery went subsequently. But, you know, I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. It was my first business. It's certainly not the most difficult thing I've ever done, but it certainly is the hardest, because when you own your own business, you know, you're responsible for everything. So the vision
right.
took shape after the gallery was open, not before.
And how did you find artists? Where would you go out to find artists? I know that first one was kind of an anchor. And then how did you find more that fit your vision that was really developing, right, when you saw that artist's work?
Well, early on, artists, we had to go out to schools. My partner and I, we had to go to artist studios. We went before Williamsburg was Williamsburg of today. It was a relative wasteland, but what was great about it was rents were cheap, so there were a lot of artists in Williamsburg, and it was really a very different place, and this is only 15 years ago. It seems like a millennium ago, but so we'd go to artist studios several times a week. Anything that happened at a local arts program within a college, we found ourselves there in terms of openings and student exhibitions. And then eventually what happens is word gets out. There's a new gallery. We were really the first gallery right in the heart of the Meatpacking District, first contemporary gallery. So we were in a great place for people to come and visit. And then everyone would say, the artists would say, do you want to look at my work? And once word got around, the artists started coming to us. And the roster built over time. It's changed a lot. A lot of artists are with us on their third, fourth, fifth shows, but there are a number of artists that may have only come through once. As we refined our vision, we figured out who we wanted to stay with long term, and really that's how it started. It's very cumulative.
In those beginning years when you're saying artists are sending you things, you know, so there's all these different ways of meeting artists. You know, idea of the gallery is beginning to take hold, and I suppose you're writing up kind of the policies or the kind of work you look for. What did you see coming in from artists? I mean, that must have changed over the years. Did you see trends of work, like conceptual work or not? Or, you know, I mean, because now you've been doing this 15 years. You've seen artists.
17 years. And
17 years. So you've seen artists sending things in for that long. Have things shifted?
More experimental work. And I mean that in terms mainly of, in terms of sculpture and installation-based works. As technologies developed, particularly digital technologies, that's what I'm referring to, more of the work incorporated video, even though it might be a show that was primarily sculptural, there'd be more of a video component. Now those video components are literally embedded in the works. But I would say the biggest changes weren't so much in painting as it was, as they were in sculpture, and the willingness to experiment with lots of different materials. That's the biggest change I see in 15 years, and the willingness to experiment with many, many different materials.
That more artists are using more materials now.
And different materials, and materials that wouldn't be considered maybe 15 years ago. And more video elements within the installations. Less painting. Everyone said painting was dead for so many years. I don't believe that at all. I think a lot of critics just wanted to say painting was dead because it was the thing to say, and it self-perpetuated that theory of painting being dead. And now it's made a comeback, and I feel like painting never died. There were always painters around. You just had to look. And maybe there was an element of painting that wasn't so wonderful, but there were a lot of, but everyone, the critics wanted to concentrate on the bad painters to say painting was dead instead of bothering to look at the good painters that were out there that weren't getting recognized. So I never bought that thing that painting was dead. It just had to share the platform with other kinds of art, and it still has to share the platform. But painting is as alive as it's always been, and I think it's a sculpture and installation that has grown more by leaps and bounds.
And I agree. I mean, I think the whole painting is dead idea was it's kind of platitude, like God is dead. You know, it's a little more complicated than that.
I think it just gave critics something to talk about.
Right. So you've communicated with a lot of artists over the years, and have a lot of experience in how they present themselves. Has that also changed? I mean, you've seen a kind of digital shift in how artists are presenting work, haven't you?
Yeah, digital technology is when you say artists presenting themselves, you mean as people or as artists? Do you mean in terms
in terms of presenting their work, you know, artists now can show work on an iPad or a phone or
easily
through the internet as opposed to you have to see prints or slides or even, you know, photographs of the work.
Oh, yeah, and when it started out, I mean, really people 15 years ago, I don't think many artists had websites. So we'd get slides, which are very expensive because the artists had to shoot the work well to make slides that were good enough to present professionally. So there'd be slides and then, or sometimes photographs, which maybe were a little less expensive. So 8x10s, then it became, discs, and then it became, websites. And then now it's become Facebook. but mainly websites. Every artist has a website, and that's good in many ways because it gives the artist more exposure. But there was a time when every time one of our, not all of our artists, but whenever a number of our artists made a new work, before I'd see it, they'd be sharing it with their friends either through their website and even more so now on Facebook. So there's no sense of revealing something during a show. Everything is revealed all the time, constantly. And yes, the time one can see it in person is when it's in a show, but generally most of the work has been mediated way before the exhibition, even before a press release goes out. And I try to encourage my artists not to put it out there all at once. Let the exhibition, the physical exhibition, reveal things.
I like that because, of course, it's a physical experience. The reproductions online and they're 2 inches tall or whatever it is.
I still can't get over how many, and I'm not naive, but I somehow still can't get over how many artworks and art fairs are bought over Instagram. And I think what happens is you lose the experience of seeing an art in a quiet place, one-on-one, close up where you can meditate on it. People are just reacting to the visual element of the art because really that's not much more you can get by a piece of artwork when you see it digitally. All you can really get is the visual, the aesthetic. You can't commune with a piece of art over an iPad and certainly not over an iPhone. Now, I don't have any problem with any of my clients buying a piece of artwork. In fact, many do just off our website and off of images I send because they don't have the time to travel every time they see a piece of artwork to another city to view it. So I don't necessarily object, but it's really shocking how much of the art world is seen through not the original lens, but multiple lenses. It's just mediated through second and third and fourth generations of viewing, and many right. decisions are made that way. And when artists purchase off of Instagram, it just surprises me. But that's the trend. That's the cool thing. And a collector can say, I bought this off of Instagram. I mean, it just becomes part of the conversation. So there's really nothing really wrong with it. It's like in the old days, it would be collectors having friends to their house and saying, I spent $20 million on this painting. And the big wow factor would be the $20 million. Now the wow factor right. is I bought this work off of Instagram. It might not be worth it. I'm exaggerating to make the point, but I think you get it.
Yeah. So speaking of the market, then I think this is a good thing to kind of close with. You've seen the market for a while, and you also survived, 2008 when a lot of galleries closed. I know it's a lot to talk about in one breath, but maybe even just around that time, because you're a surviving gallery, so you're doing something right. What happened around 2008? There are a lot of people who feel that, the market kind of ended for art and never recovered. But from all the people I talk to, it seems that the market has fully recovered and some.
When 2008 happened, I made the decision. We always had storefront galleries. We only had three locations. The Meatpacking District storefront, the rent was under $2,000 a year. And then Alexander McQueen and Stella McCartney moved in, and that, after my five-year lease was up, the rents just tripled and more. Then we moved for 5 or 6 years ground floor space on West 26th Street. By that time, the rent was high, but we were subletting part of our space, so that helped. Then the market fell through, and a lot of galleries closed. And I said, we've been around long enough. I don't need a storefront. I'll just move to the fifth floor of another building. And I did. And that was really a good decision. It helped us survive, especially until the market recovered. What happened in 2008, which is very unfortunate, before that time, the trend had been to some degree is everyone was getting excited about artists in grad schools. And a lot of dealers were taking the artwork right out of the graduate school program, 40 by 60 paintings of basically unknown artists, throwing them up on the wall saying, this is the next hot thing. And these paintings are somewhere between $10,000 and $30,000. And then when the markets fell out, a lot of gallerists, a good number closed. Their artists were left high and dry. Or if the galleries didn't close, those higher prices couldn't be justified. And then the worst thing, of course, is to have to lower the price of an artwork of an artist that had been at, fairly high and maybe not justifiably so coming right out of graduate school. So that was a bit of a disaster. But I think a lot of consumers realized, let's be more careful with emerging artists and what we spend on them. But we're back to that stage where I think the market has recovered for very high-end art. I think the very high-end pieces are doing very, very well, but I think people are still cautious to a degree about emerging artists because of what went on before 2008 with the rampant speculation. And that's unfortunate. Our philosophy at Rare has always been raise the prices reasonably over time and don't get greedy, because a career is long-term. And doubling and tripling prices just because you've had a great show doesn't justify doubling or tripling prices for a long-term strategy. So I'd say, the market's recovered, but it depends what segment you're looking at. But it's, of course, much better than it was in 2008 and 9 and 10. But I don't believe – I think just – collectors. Also, the markets are crowded. I mean, the emerging artist market is crowded beyond belief. I participate in art fairs, and I actually co-founded the Scope Art Fair, although I no longer, many years I have not been involved in the business. There's way too many fairs with way too many galleries with way too much clutter. And that's one thing that depresses prices for emerging artists. It's unrelenting. I don't know how collectors, you have to be very focused as a collector when you go to these fairs. Otherwise, you will find yourself very confused.
So that's a good way to bring it back to artists in closing. You say it is a crowded field for, you know, dealers really, as well as emerging artists, as you were talking about. What can an emerging artist do to, you know, to gain an edge and to have a higher profile in this very crowded field? I'm talking people who are trying to get to New York or have a show in New York that previously haven't had one, most cases.
I get this question a lot. Many years ago, I would advise artists, don't be different just for the sake of being different. But really, in 10, 15 years later, my philosophy is the first thing you better be starting off is very different visually. You have to stand out. You have to pop out at an art fair. You have to pop out off the page. You have to pop out off the internet. There's so many artists, and a lot of them are even not realizing it, copying from each other. They're just overlapping stylistically in many respects, whether purposefully or not, or subconsciously. And I think and I don't know how you'd be different, but I'm not an artist, so it's up to the artist to figure that out. And being very aware of what's going on with them, with other artists, is part of it, so that they just be very different, very individual, and the way to do that is let your personality fully come through. Let the work be based on your life experience, because one person's life experience is so different from another artist's life experiences. But then you have to deliver everything else. You have to deliver the aesthetic, the materials, the craft, the concept, the subject matter. That all goes to how you're different, how you combine all those elements of what makes a great work of art. And it's very easy to give that advice when you're not an artist, but I think it's good advice, and the artist has to figure it out. And then once they have really figured it out for themselves, then it's how do you get into a gallery? I mean, we always take slides or look at links and things like that. It's very difficult. I don't know the answer, because every gallery functions differently. The easy way now is, you know, when an artist walked in with a whole bunch of slides, they'd either want to leave a whole bunch of slides with the return envelope or just start showing you the slides. And now they just give you a card with their link on it. So it less interferes with the day of the gallerist by taking the card. And then at some point, the gallerist, if they're interested and if the artist has been engaging when they came in, even if it's a brief time, they'll just go and check out the link. And we've done that. And if we like something, we'll have the artist back in to look at it, to talk with them, and maybe then do a studio visit. So in some ways, it's easier to get a gallerist to look at you when you have a website than before, but there's still a huge amount of clutter, and an artist has to figure out a way to get through that, and it's by being extremely individual in their approach to how they make their work.
Peter,
which I think goes without saying. I mean, it's not, you know, a formula or a great thing I'm saying here. It's kind of obvious.
No, but I think coming from you, it's also your experience in looking at artists' work for a while, and it is about, as you're saying, what's also individual, what visually is standing out to you that makes it, something that you notice, essentially, right? As opposed to being derivative or following a trend, is also what I'm hearing you say. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I always like the work. I always tended to take artists that went against the trends because they stood out as being different to me. That was always the case. It's like when there's a show up and the dealer, at the end of a show, the dealer ends up maybe buying a work and it's the one everyone else rejected. But sometimes the last work that remains in a show is the one that shows more than any other work in the show, where the artist is taking the work in the future and shows a sense of growth towards a future change in the way they're making the work. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with looking at those artists that are off trend or that are showing something above and beyond where everyone else is static. They're passing. They're moving forward. In a way that maybe you don't see other artists doing that have come across your desk?
Well, in terms of just the artist who is, you know, as you're saying, you know, managing all these difficult things, one of the keys, it seems, is also having a kind of a rapport. I mean, you mentioned an artist coming in and talking a little bit while giving work, and it sounds like it's important that there also is some kind of initial rapport, which is kind of subtle, and it's about...
Absolutely. That's a large part of it. It's because you want an artist that's articulate, and that, you know, with collectors, they'll be articulate and charming and smart. And if they're that way with you, you can rely on the fact to some degree in moving forward, or at least hope that they're the kind of artist that wants to establish a rapport with the gallery, to work with the gallery. It's not just about the gallery working for the artist, but the artist and the gallery working together. And when you see someone who has that flexibility and that innate sense of partnership, you really are more predisposed to that artist than someone says, here, can I drop off my slides? And, you know, when they don't engage you at all, I mean, they always... No, it's tough because an artist feels like they're interrupting your day sometimes. So they could be the most wonderful, charming person in the world, but, you know, if you just come in and say, here's some slides, or here's my website, here's my card, but you look at it when you get a chance, that doesn't go as far as somebody actually taking a little bit more of your time and showing a sensibility that they're interested in your gallery, and they're not just shopping their slides around 20 other galleries saying the same thing.
That's very significant and I think important to say, and that is by having a conversation and showing off to some extent their charm and ability to engage.
Right, because you need that. Yeah, absolutely, because you need that. Sometimes, and many times, collectors want to get to know the artist or they just meet the artist. Also, they have to have an ability to say more, you know, put their thoughts together coherently. And then, you know, they go to openings, they're out there in the art world, you know, and they have to be their own ambassadors, and you want them to function when they're not, you want them to function well when they're not in a closed environment with you at the gallery. You want them to function on their own when you're not around in a very positive way, engaging other people in the art world. Because it really is, I'm a one-man shop, and I really rely on the sense of partnership with the artist to work with me to promote the work.
It's interesting. That really is a fairly sophisticated technique, though. It's one of the things that artists just coming out of school probably don't have. I mean, maybe some do, but that's something you learn. It's also, you know, an ability to really conduct yourself in a, and correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of in a business manner as well as...
Yeah. And can you imagine asking a 20-year-old to do that? Gosh, when I was in my 20s, I didn't know which way was up. And then when I'm a dealer many years later,
exactly.
I'm expecting of an artist what I probably didn't have myself when I was in my 20s. It's very hard. And I think a lot of it is innate. I think it's a lot. You're born with it. It's how you're raised by your family. And then it's what you do with it. I don't expect someone in their mid-20s to have the same level of sophistication of someone in their 40s. But you got to start somewhere.
Right.
You got to start somewhere, and a lot of it starts innately with the artist, and then they develop it over time. And as part of the gallery, your job is to help them along. Your job is to help an artist get to that level of you know, feeling comfortable in the business world, because it's very, you know, many people that come out of school go into corporations or an environment where they're protected to some degree from their mistakes. There's a learning process where they can afford to make some mistakes. When an artist comes out into the world, in the business world, they're completely on their own. You've got to realize how hard it's got to be to come out there. And in the sales area, it's harder than anything else. It's not like they're sitting in a room writing white papers or doing research. They're out there actually doing what a gallery does. They're trying to sell their work to a gallery in the broadest sense of the word. And then the gallery then has to go out and literally sell the artwork. So to expect, you really have to, as a gallerist, be willing to work with an artist and be a mentor. And that's, I think, probably my strongest quality, is being a mentor to artists. I mean, sometimes, you know, everyone makes, you know, I'm not perfect in any sense of the word. I make mistakes, but, you know, you learn from your mistakes, because that's the only way to learn, is by making them. But over the years, I've tried very hard to be a good mentor to artists, and in many cases, it's worked out.
And when you talk about mentoring the artists, these are artists that you represent that are in the gallery that,
yes,
that you're talking about?
But I'll even take time with artists that aren't. If I like their work and I might not show it, and just give some guidance and, you know, send them on their merry way. But yeah, with the artists I show, I try to spend as much time with them as I can. And if it's, you know, if it's not in person because they don't live close by, it's over the phone or through emails. I try to guide them with good advice, make suggestions.
And are those suggestions that have to do with developing their body of work or
career choices
they're making?
Yeah, the suggestions are like, well, for example, there'll be everything from, should we do a group show or should you be in a group show with this gallery? Here's some suggestions for where you might want to you're taking your work here, so maybe consider doing, since you're going in this direction, making a small group of works for this group show that reflect this particular theme. Or, you know, so it'll be business suggestions in terms of how to deal with a specific gallery or whether to deal with a specific gallery in the context of a group show, or it'll be me bringing an opportunity for a museum or a solo show at another gallery and saying, look, I'm approaching this gallery and I want to know if you'd be interested in doing a show with them because they seem interested or might be interested in your work. So it's an ongoing process. Some artists want more input, some need more input, some want less input. So it's when you have 17 or 18 artists, you have to figure out the degree you can suggest. Some want more hands-on, some want less hands-on, and sometimes you, as a dealer, you get very confused.
Sure. Well, that sounds like a
degree.
Lot. Is that about the limit of what you could work with?
Yeah. I'm not an artist. I mean, I have a great eye, but I've always had a good eye. It just it's gotten better though over the years, much better by just experience. But yeah, I'm not an artist, so you got to be careful what you say. And especially, you know, the thing is, if I love work, I have a lot to say. When I'm not happy where work is going, it's very difficult to say it, but you've got to be supportive. And then you've got to find a very diplomatic way to make suggestions without acting like you're the artist, because the worst thing a dealer could do is think they're an artist. The horror stories are that I've heard over the years, and all gallerists have heard them, and probably we've all been guilty of them at one time or another. But the one
you
thing
mean the
I've
kind of notion of directing the artist to paint this way or work?
Yeah,
this
I've never done that. But you go to a fine line and you try not to cross it. Yeah, the worst thing is for a dealer to think they're an artist. And if they do an artist's job better than the artist, that's something I've been very careful about. And I learned early, you know, when to keep my mouth shut. You learn early because you know when you've crossed the line, an artist will let you know. And I'm glad I learned my lessons in that regard very early on. With artists that I've shown a lot of years and that I'm very comfortable with, they'll let me, and they'll know it comes from a good place, they'll let me make suggestions and they'll actually ask for them. I just have to be careful not to get overly enthusiastic or overly excited, because then you find out you're saying things that you shouldn't be. And then, you know, sometimes I'll catch myself. I said, look, this is just what I think. You've asked me, you do what you want. That's how I always leave it. Do what you want, but you've asked me, you've opened the door. I told you what I think. And it's not about how to paint or how to sculpt. That's not the kind of suggestions I'm referring to. It's about going in certain directions, and I'll say, all right, you've asked me the question. Here's my opinion, but you do what you want. That's how I leave it.
I like that. That makes sense. I think it's exciting what you're doing. For the listeners who are hearing this, you know, some will hear it this summer, some will hear it after the summer. What is the show that's coming up that people should attend if they're in the New York area?
Well, the first show is September 10th, and this is actually a very unusual show in terms of materiality, because it's Leslie Lyons and J.B. Wilson. They're a couple. They have their own separate careers in different media, but together they do these art floor, wall, and ceiling tile installations. They found a way through a sublimation process of heat and pressure to embed whatever imagery they want to in tiles that can be floor tiles anywhere in your home, or wall tiles anywhere in your home or office or retail space. And there was an ancient practice that influenced them of Greek and Roman nobility in ancient times who were very wealthy, and they'd have these elaborate feasts of very exotic foods. And then just to prove that they can do it, they throw the remnants of the food on the floor. And then they got the idea of using artisans to create frescoes and mosaics showing the refuse and the remains of the feasts. And so they took this idea and put a contemporary spin on it. So a lot of they have this one set of floor tiles called Feast, which shows contemporary foods embedded in the tiles. They've done one installation called Bank, which is completely covered with banknotes, $100 and $100,000 banknotes. There's one called Bathroom, which is a bathroom floor strewn with clothes. And these are photographic images that are printed out in ink on certain kinds of paper, and then they're literally embedded into the surface of the tile through a pressure process. And
I love that. So it's the illusion of being in one of those rooms.
But very contemporary spin, and there'll be wall and floor installations, and then they did, and it'll be matched up with another series called Shower, and these are people who are in the shower on shower tiles. Again, their imagery is literally embedded into the tiles of photographs that they've taken, and you'll come into the gallery and feel that there are shower stalls, in a sense, with people in showers taking showers in the gallery, but it's all an illusion. Mm. So that opens September 10th. That's a very exciting show, very unusual process, very unusual use of materials. And again, it goes right to our vision, or part of our vision of what we like to show at the gallery. Unusual materials or unusual use of materials, exciting technique and process. But again, the underlying basis is an experience that rang true with the artists. An aesthetic experience that they are translating from an ancient practice into a very contemporary aesthetic.
I like that. It sounds exciting. It sounds like a show that has to be seen as opposed to seeing documents of. Well, I hope everyone comes to see that. Peter, I want to thank you for talking with me today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.